everyone, it's Sarah Milliken. And also I'm joined by Chief Brody, my big ginger Tom, who is currently licking himself, if you can hear that in the background. Apologies for that, or you're welcome, depending on what you like. Welcome to the Standard Issue podcast. In this episode, me and the editor of the magazine, Mickey Noonan, had a bloody good chat with, oh, such smashing women, Claudia Winkleman, Sharon Horgan and Sandy Toksvig. We covered mirrors, death talks and life lessons from Sheila Hancock. This episode was recorded in front of a live audience at Leicester Square Theatre in London. We've got a whole bunch of these booked in, so get your tickets. We've got some excellent guests coming up. Miranda Hart, Sue Perkins, Victoria Corrin Mitchell, so many brilliant, brilliant women. The February show is sold out, but tickets are available for the others. Go to standardissuemagazine.com/events for ticket information. A little bit of admin, just a quick reminder to please rate, review and subscribe to all of our podcasts on iTunes, including previous live events and fortnightly Geek Girl Celebration Strong Female Leads. You can have a good read of our articles, news and reviews by following at Standard Issue UK on Twitter or find us on Facebook. Or just have a look. Just have a look at the magazine. It's cracking. I love it. Everything here is just our opinions, so don't get het up, pets. Thanks. Right. I'm going to let you get cracking. Enjoy.
Standard Issue for all women.
Welcome to Standard Issue. Woo! Please welcome to the stage Sandy Toksvig, Claudia Winkleman and Sharon Horgan.
I wish I wasn't the only one drinking beer.
Yeah, we have noticed that.
Also, can I just share this with the group? We don't know what they're asking us. We're here because we will just all do whatever Sarah says. Like, no, honestly, yeah. We all turn up. I saw Sandy. I was like, what is it? And when I was dropped off, they said, no, it's definitely the Hippodrome. I was like, oh, dancing for Sarah. I mean, whatever Sarah wants. So we have no idea what you're asking. I don't even know if there's a theme, if this is a quiz night. We are in the dark. I just want you to know that.
Can I just point out that I did tell them all what we were doing?
You did?
But they just don't read their fucking emails.
I don't. It was from Sarah. Can you make these dates? It'll be fine. Yeah, okay.
I did text you last week saying, am I seeing you? And if so, where is it and what is it?
But now that I know that you're so keen on dancing, Claudia, we could do the Hippodrome next time for sure.
Of course.
The two of you. Tassels.
The huge. It's happened before.
It's a totally different night to what you guys were expecting, right?
And now the rumba.
Where's our balls?
Yeah.
That's
what we asked ourselves a lot.
Why didn't you let him win, Claudia?
Why didn't I let him win?
Yeah.
He sort of won, didn't he?
Yeah.
He won our hearts.
Can you ring it? Can you fix it?
Oh, well, I've done it. Oh, no. Tess, say this name. This person is the nicest. No, of course, I don't. I never know anything because they've... This is so boring, but I'll tell you this quickly, is whenever they tell me a secret or they tell me names before they tell the press, I always just tell everybody because I think that's the shiz. So when I was doing It Takes Two, they said, Claudia, come in. It's quite serious. We're going to tell you all the names. Don't tell anyone. I said, of course I wouldn't. I'm so good at secrets. Just rely on me. Like, look at my face. Nobody. And then I got in the lift, I swear to God, 20 minutes later, with this like young, cool guy who's like, oh, are you doing the sister show to Strictly? I was like, yeah. And they were like, who's doing it? And I told him the whole thing. And then I was like, I can't believe it. I'm so excited about this one. And then they went to the producers and went, right, yeah, she's really leaky. So, on so many levels. Anyway. But he didn't know that. And so now I don't know anything. They don't tell me the winner until Tess has said the name. Anyway, I'll stop speaking.
So do you find out the winner when the public finds out the winner?
I know. That's why my face. Tess is told because she's grown up and brilliant and is a professional. And if you ever see the shot, so Tess says the name and there's always me going...
Is that true?
Yeah.
That's great.
Don't tell me anything, ever.
Okay, first question to Claudia. How good at secrets are you? Okay, first question. I'm going to ask Sharon. What never fails to make you laugh, to really make you crack up?
Oh, I was just saying earlier, it's such a boring answer, Snapchat, face swap. if you do a good face swap, that to me is the funniest. That's the funniest thing I've ever seen. My daughter uses Snapchat a lot, and she face swaps with anything. Like if there's like a cat face on a deodorant, not that there would be. That's ridiculous. But on the tin of cat food.
I would buy that deodorant though.
But she'll face swap with any kind of an inanimate object, and then I'll see her little face on the thing, and then the ridiculous, you know, graphic image in her face. That's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. So forget about comedy or anything like that. It's face swap.
I don't really know about Snapchat. I feel like it's passed me by. I thought it was just knobs.
Why did you think it was knobs?
What do you mean it's just knobs?
I thought people sent you pictures of their knob because it disappears really quickly, doesn't
it? No, that's chat roulette, isn't that? That's knobs, I think.
What is the thing with the knobs then?
I'm sorry, wait a minute. Are there apps just for penises?
So many.
We're living in a man's world, Sandy.
Sandy, all those penises out there you never knew about. You must be gutted.
And you know, weirdly, I'm fine. So you're asking about what makes people laugh, right? My terrible thing, which is my sort of naughty secret, is that a really good death makes me laugh, okay? And my favourite, this related to penises, if you go to Trafalgar Square and you go to what was the Rhodesian High Commission but is now the Zimbabwe Embassy, there are 18 statues carved on the outside of the building, and these were carved in Victorian times and they were thought to be rather risque because the statues were naked. And they don't any longer have penises because in 1932, a man, a perfectly innocent man, was walking along and one of the penises, which was quite large, fell off and killed him.
Oh, that's a good death.
You shouldn't laugh, but... And so they had all the other ones cut off. And I always think... The stonemason who got that gig, who was told to go along and get rid of 17 willies.
And has somebody still got them, do you think?
Maybe they're around. I don't. Yeah, maybe like paperweights in the commission. I don't know. So not funny for the man in 1932, but yet still funny.
I'm really scared of flying, and like anywhere, any sort of length of journey, I'm scared of flying. I remember flying back to Dublin one Christmas, and the plane I was going to get on had like a sort of red nose kind of reindeer painted on the front of it, and that's the only time I've got on a plane and went, there's no way this is going down, because that would just be too funny and ridiculous.
That would be great, though. Yeah. A plane is missing. You'll recognise it if you see it.
It's called Rudolph.
Yeah.
Claudia, what makes you laugh?
Well, this is going to sound sick, but I'll say it anyway. Because my favourite thing is kids who are really grumpy. My children. So my five-year-old at the moment is livid. Livid.
About?
Just everything. No, I did not even say that. If the toast comes, it's... I can't believe... Anyway, just livid. Frustrated. Unbelievably thick, we think. And... unfathomably stupid. I didn't want it to be so dark at 5 o'clock. Mummy, I promise that I asked for it not to be. We're like, dude. And my husband and I are like weeping. He's so grumpy. We think it's because he's the third, so he never gets to choose anything first. We're like, you want this? Oh, did you? Oh, right, okay, so. We're doing this. We're playing steaks and ladders. This is what we're eating. Suck it up. And so, and now for the first time he's rebelling and we have to leave the room. I mean, yesterday I just almost walked into a door. I was crying with love. There was something about a balloon he'd been promised. It goes up, it goes down, and then, why is this happening to me? I was like... And my shoulders are shaking. Anyway, yeah, funny. Come to mind. He's funny. I'm in love with him, but he's funny when he's grumpy.
What never fails to really piss you off, make you angry?
Oh, I'm constantly livid. No, I'm not. I'm trying to think of something. I don't get angry. I try not to get angry because I just get orange and read out loud and it feels easier. You know.
You don't like unkindness. I know that about you.
No, I don't.
That makes you irritate.
Yeah. It does. Yes. Because yes. We're only here for 4 minutes, so you might as well smile and make somebody a cup of tea. Sandy?
I don't like being asked about what makes me cross.
Shit.
I get really mad if I'm asked. I don't like injustice. I can't bear that a misogynist is about to enter the White House. That makes me furious. I don't like some of the way in which the press use language casually. Are offensive, I think, casually. There's a kind of thing, accepted thing now, of being not nice to people, and it's old-fashioned. I like people being nice. So I don't do... What is it? You taught me about Twitter.
Did I introduce... I didn't introduce you.
I don't do it. I can't be bothered, darling.
That's what I told you.
I've got far too much to say. I can't be bothered to shorten it.
What did I tell you about... What did I tell you about...
You explained
Twitter?
Me how it worked once.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, do you do it still?
Yeah, I do. Claudia and I were talking a little bit about this before, about when we did an hour or 2 hours of Comic Relief we co-hosted, and I said, I got so much shit on Twitter for that, because apparently my resting face, my face when I'm doing the serious stuff, while you were talking, doing the serious stuff, and I was just supposed to be listening, apparently my face looks like I'm really annoyed at famine. A healthy way that you should be, but like, this again, for fuck's sake. And somebody said I disrespected Africa because I had leggings on. It was a really charming drive home to read all of the lovely messages from people.
If I do something, I won't go on it after. I quite like Twitter, and people in general are lovely to me, but that's possibly because I don't read enough. But I don't... If I've done Strictly wearing a slightly odd outfit, when I've had 3 double-dip spray tans and I've done my own eye makeup, I'm not touching it. I'm not going near it till Tuesday. And then I don't backtrack. Were they happy with me? Oh, they are. They're happy with me. I don't do that.
I think that's the best way to use Twitter, is to just go on it for fun, but not to look for... acceptance.
No, well, also, if you not for the good or the bad.
No, that's true.
Then you have to believe both.
Well, the reason I had leggings on for Comic Relief is because they're really fucking comfy. And I thought that's what, you know,
it's
that's
hurt
what
you,
people
though.
Would want.
It's hurt you, I think. You're defensive about
well,
the leggings.
Well, yeah, but tights would have hurt me more because they always give me thrush. And so, better to get some shit on Twitter and have a lovely fanny. That should be like my new title or catchphrase or something, shouldn't it?
I might actually tweet that.
You're going to join just to tweet that?
Yeah. A twat tweet. That would be good. I'd like that. I have tens of thousands of followers on Twitter and I don't say anything. And sometimes in the night I think, I'm just going to write boo. And I don't know how, so I don't do it.
Sharon, what makes you angry?
Oh, God, loads of things.
Are you quite an angry person generally or not?
I've definitely gotten angrier over the years, or maybe just kind of less tolerant. Mm. I find myself getting angry on a sort of daily basis. Like, something that makes me angry is people who don't know how to respond to just sort of social kind of niceness. You know, when you give someone a smile in the street, or, you know, or someone who's serving you in a shop, or like a mum I might pass on the school run. If you give a smile and they just don't know how to deal with it and you get a sort of grimacy sort of face back, that winds me up.
Is that a regular thing for you? Is that a...
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's nice to sort of smile at people.
Do you get... So if you like smile and they don't smile back, do you then just go... Or do you go,
fuck you, yeah. What's your problem? What's your problem with me? Like that.
Maybe the other people who don't smile at you have seen you in action.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like such a simple thing. I mean, maybe people are sort of scared in general, or people just don't know how
But you're right, there's some people who don't say thank you if you've held the door open or something.
Oh, God.
And then I always say, you're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, I love a bit of that. I love a bit of street, random street aggro.
Yeah.
If anybody's in front of me and they're too slow, I always, in my head and sometimes aloud, say, today would be nice. Aggressive, isn't it?
Is that when you're walking or in the car?
Both.
Okay.
Everywhere.
Get out of my way.
In the fridge, anything, loads of things.
What is it with people on public transport doing FaceTime? What is that about? So I take the bus a lot because I think it's environmentally friendly, but it's not good for your head. And there was a woman on FaceTime giving out her password and her sort code. I'm writing it all down.
Can you not just pop up behind her in the FaceTime? You're like, hold on a minute. Isn't that Sandy Toksvig behind you? Huh? You should definitely do that next time. Can you guys tell me the best and worst thing about your work and life? Start with worst, Sandy.
So the worst thing are a few things that have happened to me. I needed to go to the... So women in particular will appreciate this. I needed to go to the loo, and I was really desperate. I was out in the theatre, but it had one of those locks that doesn't quite lock. So you're left with a choice, right? You can... I really needed to go, and I'm not very big, but you have to sort of hover and hold the door at the same time. So I thought, because I haven't got very long arms, and I just thought, I'm just going to wee. It's clearly the door is shut. So I'm weeing like a donkey, big wee, and the door bursts open, and this woman goes, oh, I'm so sorry, and then she shut the door again, and then she bursts open again and went, you're Sandy Toksvig. I said, you want to wait till I've washed my hands? I don't know.
Do you want it written in piss, love?
So that's weird, right?
That is
when people...
And what is the
best... That's the best thing. What's the worst thing?
The best thing, and this is a secret, is it's fun. It's fun what we do. I enjoy it. I'm 58 years old. I've been doing this for 35 years. I've laughed for 35 years. How fun is that? That's great.
I feel so ridiculously lucky. I don't know how this has happened. And you should also know that I think my whole career, because it's been... because I've been so lucky, it's just a construct that my parents have created to make me feel good. So I think that they've employed... I don't think Strictly goes out. I think they've gone, make her feel good, build her up. I think these are brilliant lookalikes, and I don't know, well done for them casting all of you. I imagine that my mum's, yes, this is real, she believes it. So that's how I feel about everything I do. I just sort of can't believe it. I can't find a bad thing. At the moment, I really can't. I love the fact that I get to do different things. So on Radio 2, I can talk about the Bee Gees. When I say talk about, I mean, here are the. I like the fact that the Sunday Times are letting me write for them. I like the fact that then I can go get all excited in sequins. And the best thing by miles for me is how much time I am at home. So I think I don't... What I do, I like what I do, but I don't even really mind what I do. The fact is that I can be there to take them to school, pick them up, and all of that. So that feels like some magical secret. And I know that that might be a horrible thing, because most of my girlfriends, who are all a million times smarter than me, leave the house at 8 and they come back at 8. And I feel honestly incredibly lucky for the time being. I mean, I'll get fired next week, as we know.
Sharon?
The best bit about it now, I guess, is I get to do stuff that I really like. Like, I don't find myself in a position much anymore where I'm kind of doing something just to earn a buck, and that seems like ridiculously privileged, you know, that I really enjoy it and I don't have to...
But it takes a while to get there, though, doesn't it?
It takes years, and I spent years doing stuff I, you know, wasn't necessarily happy with or stuff that I had to do to make a buck, and... So that feels great. And also, 99% of the time working with people I really like, you know, like surrounded by friends.
Is this the one? Is this
the 1%?
No, because there's always a fly in the ointment. But the downside, I suppose, there is two. I mean, sometimes I have to spend quite a bit of time away from my family, unless when I'm writing, I get your lovely position where I get to drop off and pick up and stuff. But the other thing is photo shoots. Like when you have to advertise anything you're doing, and you have to because you want people to see it and watch it. So you have to do, campaign things. I'm such an awkward fucker in front of a camera, like when a photographer puts on music, and I hate him already. I hate him because he's put on music. What do you want me to dance? I'm not a monkey. Or, you know, I turn up and I think, I don't look too bad. They put makeup on me, I look 50 times worse. And that, just that awkward, awful sort of pose like this.
It's horrific.
It's my least. It's horrible.
And somebody once said to me, the way to take a good photo is to look down, okay, and then you look up and you think of absolute filth. And that's the way to take, apparently, like whatever it is, but like filth by the bin, like whatever, your own personal filth. Look down, you look up, and I was like, right, I'm going to take this on board. The Christmas photos that year, quite weird. Really, really weird. I'm there with my Uncle Alan. The baby is dressed as Rudolph, is on my lap, and I'm like, yeah, eat me. Fucking eat me. So
That's a really good tip. I got a good tip for if you're a bit larger like I am. I once stood with a woman either side of me who were about the same size as me, and when I looked at the photo, they looked sort of slimmer and I looked what I look like. And I was like, how did you do that? And they said to me, oh, what you do, you make sure that you're not the one in the middle. and then you tuck a boob behind the shoulder of the person in the middle. So I did, the next photo I had to do was, because I hate photo shoots as well, the next time I was Big Fat Quiz of the Year, and they do it at the beginning because the record is 5 hours, and by the end, you just want to kill yourself. And it was, so I was standing one side of Jimmy Carr, and Mel B was on the other side, who was like wafer thin, and I thought, I'm going to look like a fucking wardrobe standing near her. So I tucked a boob behind Jimmy Carr. But my favourite moment was when I told him I was doing it. I said, I'm just tucking a boob behind you, Jimmy. And he went, oh, my God. He liked it. But when you do stand-up, they often... your early days of doing Edinburgh shows, you have to promote your shows to try and get people in and stuff, just like you were saying with any kind of product that you're trying to sell. And they always want you to do wacky things. Yeah. And or they'll bring like a plastic, you know, what do they call them? The chicken, the rubber chicken. They'll bring a rubber chicken, or they'll bring the nose with the tash and the glasses, yeah. Which, to be fair, I've got most of that, all of that. But they do, it was a couple of times where they said, can you jump in the air? And they make you jump in the air. And just, my tits go up here if I jump in the air. But my worst one, I think, was when I was promoting the TV series and they had me in this kind of velour bar. It was just everything in it was velour. And the guy brought out handcuffs. And my PR lady said, I don't know what you're doing with that, but we're not doing that today. And... now I just say I don't do wacky and it gets me away from a lot of things. One guy who was apparently, I was told that he was the most amazing photographer and I should really feel very privileged to work with him. He said, oh, we have to give you different glasses because I can't take photos of people with glasses on because of the reflection. And I was like, I'm 41. Like, this has never fucking happened before. So they made me wear different glasses so I didn't feel or look like me. And they had the gap in, you know, where you can put your finger in because you couldn't do photo. And you're like, how good a photographer are you? My dad can do this with a fucking iPhone.
You know when they do that thing where they try and buoy you up when they know you're feeling awkward and you're doing these terrible awkward poses and everyone stands around, they think if they tell you how great you look that it's going to help, and it really doesn't. It's the absolute opposite. You just want to go, shut up. just shut up, everyone. You're all liars. I hate you. I'm leaving. But I think it becomes easier the longer you do it, because you do become a bit more of an asshole, and you do say things like, I'm not holding that rubber chicken.
I had
think of something better.
I had a guy, a photographer recently, and he said to me, and he's taking the pictures, and we all hate it. And he said, this is what the people want, Sandy. And I said, what range of people have you discussed this with? Just out of interest. Was it a full demographic survey, or...? I don't think, given the choice, this is what the people want.
There's a photo in some Edinburgh newspaper of me somewhere. It's probably Googleable. And the show was about my divorce, and they had me peeping out of an old red telephone box for no reason whatsoever. He just said, oh, there's a phone box. Could you get in there and peep out of it? And I was like, okay. Look! Maybe the phone box was my marriage. I don't know what he was doing. They are hideous. Oh, they always... I had one where they made me lie down and kick my legs back into like a cross. You know, when you have your and then you're like this. With your, yeah, exactly. You're all like repulsed by it. And I'm not even in the glittery smock that they always make me wear, because I'm not a size fucking 12.
Has anybody done adverts and had to try and
sound
like you care about the product?
No, but I would. If anyone's here, carpet, sausages. Fucking anything.
I was once told when I was quite new, and I was asked to do if I could audition for a voiceover for an advert for the radio, and I thought, oh, I'll give that a go. And they said, we think you're perfect for the product, which always makes me think, oh, what the fuck's the product then? And it was soil.
Soil?
I have the perfect voice for soil, apparently.
I have never heard soil sold on the radio. That is.
Who doesn't know about soil?
I did a television ad once for a bath cream cleanser, and I'm busy with, I've got my gloves on and everything, and the director said to me, yes, it's not really working. I wonder if you could give more oomph to cream and have a lot more fun with cleanser. That's going to be a no from me.
I did a tiny bit in a Christmas advert, a voiceover, Christmas Before Last for Debenhams, and it was a tiny bit, and I was doing it down the line. So I was in Manchester at the time, and they're all in London, and they've got headphones on and stuff. And I had to say, the part of it was to say, at Debenhams. And I was doing it. You do it like a million times. And at one point he said, can you do that again? Because it's a bit too sexy. I was fucking thrilled. Nobody's ever told me I was too sexy before. Too sexy for Debenhams.
I think Ed Balls would be too sexy for Debenhams.
Oh, thanks.
I don't like... Yeah, voiceovers are very difficult because you can't... I haven't done many because I'm rubbish at them, because they can hear my... That's what makes me angry. Okay. I remember. But when they get... When you say as, can you just say... Can you just say it differently? No.
No!
When you say sale now on, can you say it like, you're excited? Sale now on. Less excited. Sale now on. Like it's a sale that you want to go to, but you might, and it's now. What? Three words. Bye. Sale is now fucking on.
We'd all go to that sale.
I would.
Totally, yeah. Curious as to whether you had strong female, I don't like the word role models, it feels like there's too much pressure, but strong females to look up to career-wise or just family-wise when you were growing up?
I
kind of think it was anyone who was doing what I wanted to do and doing it really well. So, like, it would have been, when I was starting out, it would have been French and Saunders, you know?
Yeah.
Like, not being the best, funniest women, just being the best, funniest people on TV, and you know, but like Roseanne Barr or Julia Davis, when I started getting into her comedy, like anyone who I felt like I used to do this thing where I go, would, you know, so-and-so do that? And it sort of, I think, helped me sort of find what my path was a bit more. So any kind of like strong female, even though that seems very narrow, but, you know, writer, performer were sort of role models for me.
I mean,
and my mother.
And your mum as well. I was going to say, you got to work with Carrie Fisher.
Yes.
And that must have been pretty amazing.
It was incredible. It was, I only really properly got to know her and we just finished filming the third series. And because I think it's hard sometimes when you're that famous to kind of open up, and she was kind of protective of herself a little bit, and she liked being around people who knew her, and so she could just be herself. And for whatever reason, this series, she took a shine to me, and I, you know, had a massive crush on her for years and years and years. It was an amazing experience. She's just a wonderful, witty, constantly. We were just talking about it earlier. Constantly, just funny and on it, but really kind, like a really kind person, really loyal friend. And yeah, it was such fucking horrible, horrible news.
No, completely. Yeah.
Claude?
Yes. So I was brought up by the strongest, most brilliant woman I've ever come across, who, my mum, not somebody else.
She was raised by wolves.
We had a neighbour, she popped in. God, she was amazing. No, so my mum was a brilliant mother. And we're incredibly close. She's putting my children to bed right now as we speak. And she was strong and fantastic and sort of taught me everything I know and everything I believe in being female. We weren't allowed any mirrors in the house, which would explain, by the way, how I do my makeup. And what I wear, like the fact that I look like I've slept in a skip, because she, my brother, and for her and her husband, you know, she taught us very early on.
What about other reflective surfaces? No.
The oven, we didn't have an oven. No, we did. So you were constantly like, hello, is that a hand? Mum, I'm 15, I'm going out, give me an idea. It's fine.
I think that's really impressive to know, because I'm not brilliant with mirrors, and I stayed at my parents' house last Friday, and I realised that they have too many mirrors. And I realised that as soon as I just watched a fat lady have a shower. They've got one in the bathroom that is exactly outside of... Why would you do that? I can only imagine that when they're in the shower, they're sort of kissing their guns, my family. But I think too many mirrors is horrific. But no mirrors at all.
Well, her only thing that she was trying to teach us is this is a waste of time. I mean, perfectly fine if it looks all right, but that's nothing.
It's not important.
Not at the least. So read books, be funny, be clever, be chatty. This is how you make an omelette. I made one, it was disgusting. But incredibly supportive. I mean, by the way, gave me a standing ovation when I made my first omelette. I mean, so incredibly supportive, but be kind, be strong, you know, don't worry about all of this shiz, and, you know, staunch feminist. None of those Barbie dolls. Mummy, everybody's got a Barbie doll. That is not what women look like. You're not having one.
Okay.
So she was my, and still is my role model.
She sounds awesome.
I'm just stuck on the mirrors thing. I can't stop thinking about it. I've got a friend who hates how she looks in the morning. And so she taught herself how to put makeup on without a mirror, so that the first time she looked in the mirror, what she saw wasn't too bad. I kind of do that sometimes. If I walk into the bathroom in the morning, I shut my eyes past the first mirror, so I don't have to...
A friend of mine who was always like -4, -5, had her eyes lasered. Never really knew what she looked like. I, by the way, am also... I was born like -15. My eyesight is absolutely terrible. I've had a gazillion, you know, they gave me new eyes. Weird. Anyway, let's not pull on that string. That's something else. Anyway, and she had her eyes lasered. She had no idea what she looked like. She looked at herself in the mirror and she went, oh, shit. Because in her head, she was like a bit rock and roll, fucked up. It was all just fuzz. I only see sort of fuzz. And she went back to Specsavers and said, you've got to reverse this. Yeah. And had it reversed, and she's just in a cloud of joy. ever needs to see themselves.
I totally understand that. You know how when you put on makeup and you're supposed to use like a daylight mirror so you know what it looks like when you're out there? No way. I set the lighting really sort of nicely.
That's other people's problem,
restaurant
what
level.
I look like. Like, I apologise to them. It has got nothing to do with me.
I'm married to somebody who's much taller than me, and she put all the mirrors up, and I can just see the top of my... just see the top of my head. Which looks fine. She offers to lift me up sometimes.
Well, we're sort of on the subject of Claudia's mum. I've got an apology. Can I pass on an apology?
Oh, yes.
So my husband was on 15-1 with your mum. And
was my mum on 15-1? Do you know, you have parents and children? Was. I've never once asked her a question about herself.
Yeah, go and on. And
she was on 15-1. What does she do?
So you know how it's a semicircle on 15-1? So Gary was.
I haven't seen it.
So Gary was at one end and your mum was next one along, and he said, when he knew I was seeing you today, he said, can you pass an apology on to Claudia's mum, because he was so nervous that he farted the entire time. And she was so polite, she didn't mention it at all.
She loves wind. We're big on wind. She would have had no issue with that.
Can I just say on that, I didn't say who was the role model, and I just would like to say, because it's a fantastic thing. Your mum is an old friend of mine, and I think she's amazing, but Sheila Hancock, who is in her 80s now, is one of the greatest women in show business. So when I was 19 years old, I was desperate to be anywhere near a theatre, and between terms at university, I got a job working on the Electrics crew on the musical Annie at the Victoria Palace Theatre. And the musical had a series of New York skyline buildings that went across the stage on a treadmill like this, and they lit up, and it looked fantastic. And my job, they hired me because I was small, was to get on the back of the Empire State Building. It was fame of a sorts, and... and ride across the on the stage behind, nobody could see me, and then unplug it, and then run underneath the stage and get onto the Chrysler Building. That was my
like
start.
Like a tiny King Kong.
That was my start in show business. Anyway, Sheila Hancock was playing Miss Hannigan. She was the star of the show. She was amazing in the show. And I was the lowest person in the entire building. So one night, I'm running to get onto the Chrysler Building, and I bump into Miss Hancock. And of course I stopped, because she was the star of the show, and to let her go first. And she said, no, no, Sandy, your cue is well before mine. She knew my name, and she knew what I did, and I have never... She is now one of my dearest friends in the world, but I have never forgotten it, and that taught me how to behave in this business.
Lovely.
Do that.
Oh, that's so lovely.
She's a cunt to me now, but... Sorry. Such a good word.
Can I ask you all what you think the best thing is about getting older? Oh, Claudia,
sorry,
did that.
Sorry, I can't remember the question. You're Sarah, right?
Yeah. Sometimes. For me, I think the best thing about being older is that I give less of a shit.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. Oh.
That's possibly the only thing, I think.
No, I think I love getting older. I think I wouldn't be a day younger. I think it's fantastic. And you see these young people on television, they go, all I want to be is famous. I'll die if I'm not famous. They go, go and die, really. It's... Say what you like, dress how you like, fart as you like. Honestly, I think getting older is the most fantastic thing.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's my I wouldn't go back. And if I think about, I was all angsty. Am I doing the right thing? Am I saying the right thing? Am I wearing the right thing? Am I kissing the right thing?
Did you not have a diagram?
It was November, 1993. Turns out, no. Anyway, and as I got old, I couldn't give a monkey's. I love it. It is my favourite thing. There'll come a point where I'll go, no, I'd just like to stay here, please, so that I can just watch my children and my friends and everything else. But I'm 45 on Monday, and I love it. I absolutely love it.
I tell you what, the other thing that's lovely, the other thing that is really lovely is if you finally get lucky enough to be happily married, it's just like the best thing on the planet. It is. It's just wonderful.
I just hate everything about it. I don't get it. I am scared of death, so I'm getting closer to death all the time, every day. That's shit. And I just don't love the aging process. I don't enjoy, when things are saggier and, more sort of just decay. I just don't enjoy the decaying of me, that I'm slowly rotting. But I do like that I give less of a shit now. I like that I take less shit. And you wouldn't be able to tell this, but I'm smarter now than I was. I know that. Like, I've learned stuff and I've gotten better at things. That's nice, but that's it.
That's it. But don't you mustn't be scared of death, really, because, like, it can't be that bad. Hardly anybody ever comes back. I think...
I used to be scared of a general anaesthetic, and then I had one and it was lovely. Oh. So I think death is just a big one of them, isn't
it?
Yeah.
If you've ever had morphine.
But you know the way children are scared of death? You know the way kids constantly talk, especially when they're really young, it frightens them because they don't understand it. They don't know. It's just a horrible concept. That's how I feel. Well, when my 8-year-old gets, upset about death, I'm like, I know. Oh, my God. What are we going to do? I don't want my parents to get old. I don't want my kids to... I want my kids to get old, obviously. That would be terrible if they, stopped aging, but...
You totally want your kids to get old and go away, seriously. You do.
No? Never. Never. If I hadn't met my husband, I'd still be living at home. I'd sort of basically still be living at home. When 2 months after we got married, I'll never forget, my mum, obviously has keys, came round and came upstairs and said to my husband, like quite a serious face, we hadn't been together that long when we got married, and she went, budge up. And he just went, okay, I mean... I'm taking this all on, but is this all fine with you? I was like, yeah, budge up. So no, nobody's ever leaving. We'll just stay together. The other thing I love about getting old is I'm now brave enough to say I hate parties. There's lots of stuff I hate that I now don't do.
Yeah, I get it.
That's brilliant. Do you want to come over? It's Thursday. I'm having like a friend. She's going to teach us how to make nachos and then we'll do like a Zumba. No. There's nothing part of that night that I want to do. Yeah. That is getting old.
Yeah. But I was at a mutual friend's. You popped in for 5 minutes.
But it still had my ignition on. Came in, picked something up. I was like that. 5 hours later, I haven't seen the car. No, I'm just kidding.
She stayed because she ran out of petrol because the car's still going. 5 hours. You've got 5 minutes.
But that was three of us putting the world to rights.
That was, yeah.
That was fine. But yeah, standing around parties. Hey, I've got a fancy dress thing. It's outside London. Are you in? Fuck off. Delete me from your SIM card. That's how in I am.
I didn't even get to midnight on New Year's Eve. I mean, I like to party, but, on my terms, when I'm ready, when I want to. And I went to a New Year's Eve party, and it was the kids were there as well. So I created this whole fake lie that the kids, they don't look like. I think I better think I better get the kids home just to get out of there. I left it like 20 to 12. I couldn't.
You said we'd want to go home and talk about death.
I can't do show business parties because I can never remember who anybody is. So I really struggle. And
so Sheila Hancock didn't teach you anything, really.
Famous people, I don't know, I can't remember famous people. And I went to a party that I didn't realize was being sponsored by some Hello magazine. And they said to me when I arrived, would you have your photograph taken with this person? And I didn't hear what they said, because I wasn't really, I often don't pay full attention. And it was a man in a crumpled linen suit with the spectacles and sort of sandy hair. And we had to stand and have champagne like this, and I was smiling like this. And I thought it was Alan Bennett, because he looked a bit like Alan Bennett. And he didn't know who I was, clearly. And we just smiling like this. And a week later, there's a photo in Hello magazine of me with my good friend David Hockney. No fucking idea.
I don't, and also I think maybe I've got been to, I can't place anybody anymore. Mm. Did I go to school with them? Did I go on holiday with them?
Yeah.
Have they been on Strictly? I'm absolutely, I've got no idea. When we leave Strictly, the lovely people, they say, can you write down five names of like people that you would love to do the show? I have never not written down five people who have already done it. Never not. I'm like, Alicia Dixon would be awesome. So, I don't know, my favourite moment was once meeting Harold Bishop from Neighbours about 15 years ago, who I assumed I knew, and when he was like, no, I don't, I was like, of course I know. I like, literally, I was mounting him. Too much.
You're fine. I said cunt. You're all right.
Sandy, Claudia, hello. And Sharon, you've all got daughters, correct?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And my son, who's here tonight.
Hi there.
Yay! I don't know where he is. He's the loveliest boy on the planet.
Aww. It's not about men tonight.
Not about He's a feminist. Yeah. He's like the most feminist person I know.
Yeah, we're still cutting that bit out.
Yeah. So. Do you feel a big responsibility to teach them about the world? What would you like your daughters to know most to be able to survive as women in today's world?
Wow, that's easy. The thing is, mine are all grown up now, and they teach me, although sometimes it's a bit annoying. So I was getting on a train the other day, and my daughter is 28. She said, have you got enough money, Mum? I said, it's not a fucking saga outing. I said, I have done trains before, you know. So mine are all cooked and gorgeous and fabulous, and they're feisty women, which I'm proud of. One is a photographer, runs her own business, and one is a junior doctor working her ass off. Working her ass off in A&E with people who are not actually sick.
So, does your daughter, who's the photographer, does she make people do wacky things?
She's very keen on a phone booth. The lovely thing about having daughters is that the dialogue continues, and they teach me more now, I think, about the world and the way the world functions than I can possibly teach them. And I just love the continuing conversation. But it started when they were little. We used to sit at the table, and I used to make, even when they were very small, I used to say to them, right, everybody tell me one thing that I didn't already know. And that could include, did you know balloons can be popped? You know, or whatever. Or whatever it is that they, in their small minds, and they've sort of carried on doing that. They carry on teaching me. It's fab. They're brilliant.
Claudia?
Yes, but I also, I know this might also be cut out. I think it's very important that I teach my sons how they should look after women and worship women and respect women and all of those things. So I try and teach the three of them. Yes, I mean, look, I think they're growing up in a very... but this is what an old person would say, which I love, in brackets. I think they're growing up in a very difficult time. Yeah. I don't really like social media. I don't really understand anything. It seemed to me that I would just be wandering around in a pair of faded jeans and occasionally smoke a fag. That was as exciting as everything. It now feels quite competitive, and I'm nervous about them for that. But they're never leaving, so yeah, I'll be looking after them.
I don't know, because I feel like I fuck up all the time as a parent, and I feel like I'm, you know, constantly
Is that
learning.
The death chats?
I honestly do. It's a terrible truth. But I think I try and make sure that they know it's okay to be a bit weird or be a nerd or don't be part of the crowd. Like when my daughter started secondary school, she so desperately wanted to be part of the cool girls, and I think maybe had been in primary, how cool you can be in primary, but you know, she found it difficult that she suddenly wasn't part of that, and just making sure that they embrace that, you know, that it's so important for them to feel like an individual. And I think it is really hard for, I mean, for all kids at the moment, but it's super hard for girls. It's super hard to not try and be a certain type or not sort of, you know, look a certain way or be aware of, you know, that they're pretty or whatever.
Or even knowing that somebody else is all having a party. You didn't know that before. I don't think I was ever invited.
Oh, it's horrible.
But I didn't know. I was like, well, I have my glasses and my Lego. That was fine. And I was charming. But do you
Sounds
see what
that ideal.
Mean?
Yeah.
So I yes, to embrace the weirdness, to smile, to make eye contact, to ask questions and to be interested.
And they surprise you, I think. They surprise you with their feistiness. I remember when Jessie, who's my oldest, was seven, and she grew up with two mums, and that was very unusual 20 years ago. And I used to say to her, you know, some people are weird about things that they don't haven't come across before. Mm. And I said, sometimes it's because they don't know, and you have to help them with that. And maybe you meet people who haven't come across somebody who's got two mums before, so you need to help them with that. So she comes home from school, 7 years old. She says, Libby said today in the playground, she said, your mum's a lesbian. And I went sort of cold because I thought, oh, God, I don't want her to get bullied in any way. And I said, oh, right. And what did you say? And she said, I said, yes, that's right. Did you need more information? She said to me, she said, I thought she must be one of those ignorant people you tell me about. Very well done, darling. Well, that's good. So they can cope. They can do it. They can sort it.
I think Sarah put it really nicely. I think when you're at school and you're little, being different feels the worst thing in the world. But as you get older, being different is fucking great. They're the ones that stand out.
All the things that made me stand out as a kid make me stand out as an adult. And while that was hard as a kid, all the people that blended in at school, which was the apparently good thing, are all the people that blend in as adults. And they're really boring as fuck.
Well, it sounds like, now everybody's clapping, sounds like some of them might be into that. You know who you are, you fuckers.
Yeah, people just sitting there going, I had a fine time at school and I'm a fine grown up.
Do you have any sort of special talent / party piece?
Should I give them an example?
Let's start with Sarah.
I do this every time. You all know I do this every time. And the only skill that I have, I think, is this. That. I learned how to do it because a friend of mine bought me a bike horn from a joke shop just as a daft present once, and whenever my husband, and our husband at the time, boyfriend, used to crack a joke, and if I could be asked to respond or was tired, I'd just go back at him. I was sort of a swallowed one, back at him. And then I thought, well, I can't carry this around. It wasn't very transportable, so over the course of 2 years... I just kept doing it until it sounded good enough to air in public. And now I do it fucking everywhere. Like, smear tests everything. Just, you know, when they're cranking it open, just then.
It's worryingly good.
It gets a better response than any of my jokes have ever got. So I have to put it in every fucking show. Have any of you got anything that you, any sort of pointless, useless skills you can trot out like that?
No. I can do a very good impersonation of bacon frying, but...
Oh, please do.
No, it doesn't really work for a podcast.
Is it visual? Yeah. Are you just frying bacon in the impression?
Yeah. No, I don't
it's
have
a
any.
Smell you create. That's amazing.
Yeah. I just feel bad that maybe you're all like, oh, God, why did we... they don't have a party, please. I can do a horse impression.
Yeah, oh, yes, please.
Okay. But it's not as good as the...
That's okay. Okay. Nothing is, love.
Damn good point. I'm going to turn around because this is audio. And if you look at me, you'll never look at me again.
Just out of interest, does anybody know how to get phlegm off a microphone? Wow, you've made the seat moist and now the microphone.
Oh, I wish I had a party piece. I mean, I'd love to be able to, you know, make the smell of bacon or either of those two things. But I don't. I mean, I'd love to be someone who could take out a guitar, you know, at a party. I taught myself the baron, which is the Irish upright drum, because I realised I had very little musical ability, and maybe that was the one thing. I didn't want to be an asshole who plays the bongos, but so I thought, because it's cool, I'm Irish, I can play an Irish drum, but there was never a good opportunity. So there's only so many times I did it a lot, but I think I've lost that skill now. I lost my baron.
I was just going to ask before we go, if anybody has anything they want to plug, any shows that are coming out, or when do we get to see Catastrophe again?
I think it's the 27th of February.
Oh, it's so good! You have your...
Nothing.
Nothing. You have your, nothing. Your Radio 2 show.
Yes. Yes, yes. I suppose. No, I love the Radio 2 show, and yeah, anything. I mean, whatever you want.
I've got a new play opening, which I have written. I met an older actress who said that there are no parts for older women, that you disappear in the theatre when you're about 45. So my play has 5 parts for women over 70. It's called Silver Lining, and it opens in February at the Rose Theatre in Kingston, and then it's touring right around the country. And the women are fabulous, absolutely fabulous.
Yay!
Sarah?
Oh, nothing at the moment.
You've got a DVD out, mate.
Oh, I've got a DVD out. It's only a 5 now. I'm not supposed to say that, I don't think. I'm supposed to say, why didn't you buy it before Christmas when it was... I don't know. I don't care. Just if you want it, get it now. It's a 5. And I'm next on tour, probably next year, and that'll not be announced till mid-year, probably June, July, I think, this year. But the main thing is Standard Issue. We love it. We made it for you. It's an alternative to the... I'm going to say bullshit, because that's what I really think, that is currently out there, and we hope you like it.
That's it. Admin done.
Admin done. Oh, there are more of these. Let me plug. We've got one in February that's already sold out with Miranda Hart and Mel Giedroyc and me. And then we've got March the 27th with me and Victoria Corin Mitchell. And Sue Perkins is doing the May one. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming tonight. Please spread the word of the magazine and the podcast. And please thank everybody who's seen this.
To Standard Issue in Conversation with Claudia Winkleman, Sandy Toksvig, Sharon Hogan, Mickey Noonan and me, Sarah Milliken, recorded live at Leicester Square Theatre in London. The theme music and stings were composed and recorded by Barry Hilton, all rights reserved. Thanks to Maddie Hickish for pressing play and record and also editing, to Jen Offord for organising the event, to all at Leicester Square Theatre and to all in the audience and on the stage. All of our podcasts are available on iTunes and directly from standardissuemagazine.com/podcasts. Bye-bye.